Come fly with me, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come on and fly with me, let's fly away.
So this is Ann Dalton with Sun Sounds. This program is called Are We There Yet? Today, I will be reading to you about a day hike in Palm Springs, California, a very challenging one, and then we'll go to Lofoten, Norway, in the Arctic. What a contrast. So this first story is written by Dinah Mischief from the New York Times, and is dated March 25th, 2025. 22 miles on foot, 10 minutes on a tram, an extraordinary day hike, the Cactus to Clouds ascent just outside Palm Springs, California, is grueling, but natural treasures and a speedy trip down await anyone who is up to the challenge. The steep trail near the top of the Palm Springs aerial tramway was covered in inches of spongy fallen needles and peppered with ankle-twisting pine cones. It was also shady, which felt remarkable after the first 7 miles of the grueling Cactus to Clouds hike offered little more than a brittle bush leaf's worth of relief. I had already hiked up 7,549 vertical feet and still had about 3,000 go to the top of Mount San Jacinto, a granite crag towering just west of Palm Springs, California. For this, my third Cactus to Clouds hike, I had chosen a mid-November day, and the conditions were perfect. The 22-mile hike slopes continuously, relentlessly uphill for its first 16 miles, rising from the desert floor to the 10,834-foot summit, then 6 miles and 2,400 vertical feet down to the top of the tram, culminating in a ride back down that's well worth the $14 ticket. I started my trek near the Palm Springs Art Museum at an elevation of 482 feet just after sunrise at 6:41 a.m., carrying enough water to last until the first water source, a ranger station at 8,400 feet, and I had packed several jackets to deal with the wild temperature swings from bottom to top. People have a variety of reasons to attempt the Cactus to Clouds. It's one of the most biodiverse day hikes in the country. It's an unusual wilderness experience on the edge of an urban area. But above all is the sheer audacity of the hike. In my previous ascents, each following a significant emotional or physical trauma, diagnosis of multiple sclerosis, divorce, completion of treatment for stage 3 breast cancer, I was motivated by the idea that committing myself to this challenge would leave me with little energy to feel sorry for myself. And if I made it? Well, that was proof I could handle anything. This time, my MS was in remission, my marriage was fulfilling, and I had been cancer-free for almost 9 years. More than 15 years after my first Cactus to Clouds, it was finally about the landscape instead of about me. I had stashed a pocket guide to the plants of the San Jacinto Mountains and planned to take time to stop and smell the cedar. While the full Cactus to Clouds route is only for the supremely fit, you can also hike sections of it. Walk the bottom mile from the trailhead to a picnic area, then turn around. Or ride the tram to its top station and then climb to Mount San Jacinto's summit and back. You can even trek to the top of the tram, then ride it down, saving the summit for the next day, as I did this time because of sudden foot pain. Each offers payoffs like forever views of the Coachella Valley and a chance to spot cactus wrens, Cooper's hawks, and golden eagles. While Mount Jacinto's elevation is not remarkable, the difference in altitude from the base of the summit is. The mountain rises about 10,400 vertical feet in approximately 6 horizontal miles. This steep incline, aside from being almost the equivalent of climbing Mount Everest, accounts for the unusual variety of plant life as it passes through 4 life zones. The trail begins among desert species like bell cactus, creosote, followed by chaparral, scrub oak, and manzanita. Then comes a mixed pine forest. At the summit, the trees grow shorter, gnarled by the altitude and the elements, and include limber pine, which flourishes where little else can. The environment and life look very different down in the Colorado Sonoran Desert than at the top of Mount San Jacinto, said Melanie Davis, a lead field botanist with the Center for Conservation Biology at the University of California, Riverside, a few days before I hiked. But it's the in-between zones that are the most interesting, she said. That's where there will be the most biodiversity. Ms. Davis was right. Between 7,000 and 8,000 feet, the color green came in a mind-boggling array of shapes, textures, hues, and sizes, and with a range of unexpected smells. It was like hiking through a bowl of mixed salad greens, cedar, manzanita, oak, and agave, with Jeffrey Pines adding just a hint of butterscotch to the air. The conditions that made cactus to clouds remarkable also make it dangerous. Hikers on the trail have died from dehydration and exposure. We get about one fatality a year, said Eric Holden, a volunteer for Riverside Mountain Rescue, one of 4 search and rescue teams that respond to hikers in distress on the route. To protect both hikers and rescuers, Mount San Jacinto State Park has closed part of the route under its authority in the summer, triple-digit temperatures at the bottom, and winter, snow and freezing conditions at the top. In 2024, the trail closed in early July and reopened on November 4th. There is little shade for the first 7,000 vertical feet and no water for 10 miles. One of the biggest killers is hikers who started up realizing they don't have the physical fitness and turn around, Mr. Holden said. It might have been cooler when they started at 3 in the morning, but now they're not feeling good and hiking down into temperatures that could easily be over 100 degrees. In the winter, snow can make the trail hard to follow, especially in the 1,000 feet below the top of the tram, and hikers have gotten stranded among the cliffs. I stayed on the path in this section by following a GPS track from a previous cactus to clouds hike. Backpacker Magazine calls Cactus to Clouds the 5th hardest day hike in America. It takes most hikers between 12 and 16 hours. I tried to entertain myself from the unrelenting climb by identifying exactly which species of manzanita was scratching my legs, but that did only so much to distract me. I sat down to rest on a flat boulder 6,000 feet above the trailhead, next to what was either a pink bract or greenleaf manzanita. At least I was hiking uphill. Most seasoned hikers understand that while ascending is hard work, going downhill is downright punishing. In fact, Cactus to Clouds came to exist only because much of the descent takes place on a tram. We were dedicated hikers and always looking for a challenge, said Sue Birnbaum, one of the six members of the Coachella Valley Hiking Club, who first completed the annual Cactus to Clouds Challenge in 1993. But it wouldn't have happened if it required hiking all the way down. That challenge, an extraordinary super day hike, linked three existing trails, the Museum, Skyline, and the Mount San Jacinto Peak Trail, crossing a mixture of local, state, and federal lands and property owned by the Agua Caliente Indian Reservation with the tram, which has been operating since 1963. The mountain is part of the traditional homeland of the Cahuilla Nation. One paradox of Cactus to Clouds: it's better when there are no clouds. They obscure the views and sometimes the trail itself. This ascent also held a different kind of paradox for me. It was the first time I had ever hiked the summit trail separately, yet I felt a surge of pride because I had listened to my body and spared my sore foot. Against a panorama of the Pacific coast, the shimmering Salton Sea, and the snaggly sacred Taquitz Peak, magnificent cauliflower-shaped clouds floated thousands of feet below. With sunset about 90 minutes away, they caught and reflected shades that you would ordinarily see in a scoop of mango ice cream. Despite the warm oranges radiating across the sky, the summit was freezing with buffeting wind gusts. I was bundled up in three jackets, including a hooded down puffy coat, and would have gladly accepted another. So, as much as I wanted to linger, I wanted even more to avoid frostbite. I hopped back through the boulders to the trail and pointed myself downhill to the tram, crossing a cluster of what I identified as bush chinquapin. My pocket guide said its fruits taste like chestnuts. Next time I do Cactus to Clouds, I'll be sure to stop and give them a try. Well, my hat is off to Dinah Mischief. She is one tough cookie. And here is our second story, written by Carolyn Van Hemmert from the New York Times. Lofoten, Norway, is an adventurer's paradise in the Arctic. This is a full disclosure warning. I know no one who could help me with my Norwegian pronunciation of all these names, so if one of our listeners is Norwegian, I hope I will not offend you. On a bright April morning, bleary-eyed and after an overnight passage from mainland Norway and 4 short hours of sleep, we stumbled into a dockfront cafe in Kabelvåg, a small town on the island of Austevågøya, part of the Lofoten Archipelago. As we walked past a crackling wood stove and rusted ship's anchor, the host pointed us toward a pair of self-serve waffle irons and an enormous coffee pot. She didn't bother asking what we wanted for breakfast. The answer was obvious. Here, a good day always begins with waffles and coffee. Nivagar, a classic red-fronted lodge, serves as a restaurant, hotel, and, in winter, a dreamy base for guided backcountry skiing, complete with saunas, northern lights, and hearty meals. Though we'd only stopped in for breakfast, we might have entered the backdrop of a contemporary Norwegian fairy tale, with Ull, the Norse god of snow and skiing, at its center. The stockfish we sampled, a gift from a Lofoten fisherman, smelled as ripe as you might expect a months-old fish carcass to smell, an aroma known in Norway as the scent of money. The taste, by comparison, was so mild it was almost
bland. The fish was rock hard after months of air drying. Hitting it with a hammer helped break it into snack-sized pieces, a technique eagerly adopted by my two young sons. Fishing charters are available year-round in Lofoten. For the adventurous, combining winter angling and northern lights viewing offers a unique high-altitude experience. For the do-it-yourself summer version, the clerk of Svolvær's well-stocked fishing store offered this tip. Cod, bite, anything that move. He pointed the boys to popular fishing spots that can be reached by boat or car, and also provided tips on how to prepare cod tongue, a chewy local delicacy that soon became a family favorite. Sea eagles overhead. Fish on! My 7-year-old nearly split the sky with his shriek of delight. We were cruising through Trollfjorden, Lofoten's famous steep-walled 2-mile-long fjord that presented a backdrop as thrilling as the catch itself. Even with mist obscuring the tops of the 300-foot-high waterfalls, their scale was dizzying. My older son lay on his back on the boat's deck to take in the view. Our cod wrangling and cliff ogling was interrupted a moment later by a formidable shape winging overhead, followed by a loud splash. A white-tailed eagle had swooped in for a meal. With a wingspan of up to 9 feet, this enormous fish-eating raptor naturally turns heads, ours included. After a history of persecution by various means, a 1968 law and subsequent conservation actions helped protect sea eagles from a brush with extinction. Today, Lofoten is home to one of the densest populations of nesting sea eagles in the world, and it is a popular destination for eagle viewing, often combined with a tour of Trollfjorden or one of the area's boat access hiking trails, which are serviced by many local charter businesses. Where mountains meet the sea. If there were ever a truly amphibious mountain town, Svolvær, Lofoten's main traveler's hub, would be at the top of the list. As alpine as it is maritime, the area is a mecca for outdoor enthusiasts. Immediately above the town is Svolvær, a steep hike boasting a photogenic 2-pronged summit with a dramatic Tyrolean traverse at its summit. Or, for an all-ages outing, you can pick up Skolbrod pastry from Kringla Bakery and visit the nearby playground, which has a view of the peak along with its own kid-scaled excitement, zip line, climbing wall, and a rope swing. Some of the world's best granite crack climbing is just a short drive or boat ride away. At the Paradiset Wall, I tied in next to a college student who'd driven all night from Tromsø to reach the crags. Hopping out in the warm morning sun, I had to pinch myself when she pointed out a whale spouting in the distance. Below us, kelp shimmered through the stunningly clear water. In the distance was one of the most picturesque alpine lakes I'd ever seen. For those who prefer sliding down snow rather than climbing up rock, spring skiing stretches well into May with both guided and independent travel options. On our family's first full day in Lofoten, we trekked up Vittenden, a popular backcountry ski mountain with an otherworldly perspective of the surrounding fjords. When we returned to the water, we were invited aboard the Annie Bro, a restored wooden fishing boat that now serves as a floating base for custom adventure charters. The crew's generous welcome included hot goulash, cold pilsner, and hearty handshakes for the boys on their first Norwegian summit. Though we'd arrived at this cove by our own means, having one's own transportation or even ski gear isn't necessary. Boats are a part of the local ski culture, as is a focus on mountain safety and avalanche awareness. The Lofoten Ski Lodge offers complete ski and sea packages with lodging ranging from classic sailboats to cozy waterfront cabins and trip options that can accommodate a wide range of abilities. However, given that there are only two small ski lifts, sampling the area's best skiing generally requires trekking up first. By June, ski slopes give way to meadows rowdy with wildflowers. Summer hiking and coastal explorations beckon, with the possible added thrill of a cold water dip. After a short stroll near Breivika, we stopped at a walk-in beach popular with families. Clothes were decidedly optional. Nudity seemed to be more practical than performative, however, with swimmers stripping down and jumping in quickly before relayering just as fast. No matter what style or season you choose, venturing into Svolvær's impressive backyard demands a solid dose of self-sufficiency, and it's best to arm yourself with information. Hut culture. Until I spent a drippy June afternoon on the island of Sturmalla, I didn't know it was possible to step off the deck of a boat, wander half a mile down a rutted trail, and stumble onto an unlocked hut complete with a single bed, a stove, and a desk with a cathedral view of a tree-lined lake. I thought I'd died and landed in a solitary winter's haven. Inside the hut was an honesty box instead of a locked steel container with a narrow slot for inserting payment. There was an open jar packed with cash and a friendly note suggesting donation amounts for coffee or tea. The huts are a signature of Norwegian outdoors life. Offering an affordable combination of Lofoten's incredible hiking with a taste of authentic mountain culture. Many of them are managed by the Norwegian Trekking Association. Visitors can purchase a membership and reserve the huts online or in a tourist office around the country. At Sturmalla, as at the other huts we visited, the floor was swept, the counters wiped, the dishes stacked. Illustrated reminders of basic courtesies offered practical guides. In turn, the impeccably clean spaces inspired a culture of respect. Overnight trips aside, most of the huts we encountered seemed to exist solely for the purpose of ducking out of the weather for a few minutes, to welcome a respite to weary travelers. Norway has a law that ensures residents and visitors alike have the right to roam, meaning you may pass through open country as long as you cause no harm or disturbance to others. The hut system, in turn, operates on the premise that no one can be turned away if in need of shelter, reservation, or not. After a glorious 24 hours of solitude by the lakeside, interrupted only by the drumming of rain on the roof and a pair of loons calling across the water, it was time to return to my family. Just as I'd put the broom away and shoved the last items into my backpack, I heard a gentle knock at the door. Three young men entered, drenched to the bone and with fishing rods in tow. After greeting me with polite smiles, they placed their wet boots by the door, lit the kettle, and asked the obvious, "Coffee?" Well, that great description of a trip wants me to get to Norway as soon as possible. In conjunction with the wonderful writing, there were also aerial views of the town Rain with mountains floating like dark puffs on a deep blue sea. There was a shot of the author's two sons holding on to a fish they had caught and were holding proudly. The fish itself stretched from their boot toes all the way up to their waists. Their proud smiles told the rest of the story. And that's all the time we have today. I'll end this program with three quotes. First, one of the penalties for refusing to participate in politics is that you end up being governed by your inferiors. This was said by Plato, quoted in The Knowledge. Boy, that's a long time ago. The next, I don't want to be God, I don't like the hours. That from Rabbi Dovid Orlovsky, quoted in The Jewish Link. And finally, money is like manure. It stinks when you pile it. It grows when you spread it. Well, we have time for a couple more. Here's one. A truth that's told with bad intent beats all the lies you can invent. William Blake, quoted in the National Law Review. Here's another one. It is easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. That from Frederick Douglass, quoted in the Telegraph. And finally, next to excellence is the appreciation of it. That from William Makepeace Thackeray, quoted in Forbes. Until next time, happy traveling, whether it's by plane, bus, or train, or from an armchair.
Come fly with
I'm
me.
Ann Dalton,
let's
your
fly,
host today.
Let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come on and fly with me. Let's fly away.
If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org. Left-click on Broadcast Information and Audio, then under Program Links, left-click on Demand Podcasts. If you miss a Are We There Yet show, you can find that under Lifestyle at the same site. You can now listen to Sun Sounds podcasts on your Echo Dot or other smartphone devices.